Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
We're still calling out for your list of budget items for the government all next week as well on the programme. This government who wants people with disabilities to work and yet they feel constantly left in poverty. Saoirse, good afternoon to you.
Hi John, how are you?
I'm well, but that's how you feel, is it? That you're out there, you're working, you're in your job, but you're worried about keeping it going.
Yeah, because I'm working full time in the public sector and I've already had my disability allowance taken away and my mobility allowance is coming into question, but I already know it's going to be taken away because I'm earning too much and I'm also getting married, so that'll also come into question. So I'll have to either quit work or go part time.
There's a lot there, Saoirse. Congratulations, first of all. Is that okay?
Yeah, thank you.
When is your wedding coming up?
April 16, 2027.
Oh, very good. You're making plans, so you're busy with it. Well, congratulations. I hope it all goes well and you enjoy it. But you're saving, I'm sure, and working full time, is it?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it's like, sorry, go on.
No, you go on.
It's just that, like, even if I work full time, I don't earn enough to pay for my expenses, my like my taxis to doctor's appointments, my doctor's appointments in general, or consultants. And I do get procedures. And I remember I got they accidentally billed me because of my medical card, and it was €800 because I know my medical card will come into question in 2 years because of how much I'm earning as well.
You're worried about that. I suppose these are the things maybe a lot of us don't have to think about, the added expense you have working and living with a disability.
Yeah, there's so many added things. Like, people just think it's the wheelchair and things like that. It's not. It's medications, it's appointments, it's the procedures, it's everything.
And if you're working, Saoirse, can you, I don't know if you've looked into private medical insurance, or is that something you can explore, or you need this medical card? Tell me.
I do need this medical card, yeah, because insurance can be very tricky. You know, I might not cover everything. And to be honest, I've been lost on my medical card. And even though there is a long-term illness medical card, it doesn't cover everything either.
Give us an example of some of those expenses, because you mentioned the wheelchair and some of the medical bills. Are there other things?
Well, my wheelchair is 5,500.
5,500?
Yeah. And then you have the added wheels that go on. That's 400 each. Cushion alone is 150. And then any kind of repairs is like over, is about 100 or a bit more for repairs if you need someone to come out to you to just have a look at it. And then if you have physiotherapy, which is €70. So, do you know what I mean? Give or take, depending on the provider.
Right. And wheelchairs and cushions and some of the things you mentioned there, they don't last forever. We know this. You're going to have to fork out for these more than once.
Exactly, yeah. Like, I'm an active user. So, if I'm out all the time. So, I need regular upkeep. You know, a chair should last you. It used to be every 5 years you get a new one. Now it's until it's broken in front of their eyes. You know what I mean? So it's a constant. But when it needs to be done, you need to have. I won't be able to pay for it.
What do you mean when you say unless it's broken before their eyes, you don't get another one? Has that happened to you?
Yeah, pretty much. I was in my chair and I was telling them I needed a new one because the back was moving and I was in a lot of pain and they were just kind of being very slow about it. And then I was just sitting in my chair one day and the seat came off underneath. It just completely snapped away.
Now, that must be frightening and a worry then, because I'm sure you can't just say, look, I need it right now. A replacement probably takes time too.
Yeah, it took about 2 months for the new chair to come out. So I was at home using a very awkward chair they gave me that didn't fully fit me. I couldn't actually go into the office because I didn't feel safe. Mm-hmm. The way I describe it is if you have your car and you're used to your car.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then you're using your friend's car and it feels strange and you don't know how to work it. That's how it felt to me.
It's strange, it's unusual, and yet, like everyone else, Saoirse, you've got the same routine tomorrow morning. You need to get up, you need to go to work, and you need to be able to rely on the things that we rely on as we rely on our car or your wheelchair or whatever.
Yeah, so I need my chair every day. You know, I need my chair every day to get to A to B. If I don't have it, I can't go anywhere.
When you mention your earnings and the amount you're earning, how you've lost allowances already, you're going to lose more. Are you always very aware while you're trying to advance your career, Saoirse, that you feel there are certain limitations or caps you should not reach?
Yeah, well, like, I'm not going for like a promotion in my job at the moment, because if I do that, I'll lose more. So what's the point? So I'm just staying stagnant in the same position with no promotion, no improvements, just doing the same thing day after day, you know, which can be a bit mind numbing, but I can't go forward in my career if I'm a fear of losing everything.
Mm-hmm. What'll happen after you get married, Saoirse?
Well, they'll combine our incomes and they'll consider how much my spouse is earning. So that's where I'm thinking I'll just have to either go part-time or not work at all and do voluntary work just so I can get out of the house and have, you know, my mental health, you know?
Uh-huh. How does that make you feel? The idea that you'd have to give up work?
Well, I feel very less than. I feel that I can't, you know, be independent. I can't, you know, provide for my household, and I'm leaving that burden to my spouse.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's very unfair. Why should it be up to my spouse to look after me?
It sounds, Saoirse, like it goes against everything you've been working towards: independence, your own financial security, just getting out there, living your life.
That's all I want to do. I want my life like everybody else. I want to get married. I want to have my own. I want to have my own house. I want to be like everyone else. And unfortunately, this government doesn't allow it.
Stay with us, Saoirse. 51551 if you want to get in touch with us on this. Amy, you're listening to Saoirse as well. What's your work situation?
Hey, Saoirse. Haven't been for a while. myself and Saoirse go way back from our sporting life before all this.
In what way?
We played sports under the Irish Wheelchair Association together for many years.
Oh, very good. So, what sport, do you mind me asking?
We played rugby and we played different things as well. And we both actually volunteered with disability camps for young kids with physical disabilities.
Uh-huh.
So we've known each other a long time. The disabled world is very small.
Sounds like everybody, you got on fairly well anyway, Amy.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, of course we did. Yeah.
You understand what Saoirse is talking about here today, so.
Come here, I'm behind her 100%. I know exactly how she feels now. At the minute, I'm not working. And I'm not working simply because exactly what Saoirse has said. The allowance comes in for the medical card would be taken away. The going over the threshold, as they call it. The government have no idea what it's like to live with a very small amount of money every week. So people like myself and Saoirse, we do want to work, but they're not letting us work, in a sense of some people would say we're better off being at home, because the social welfare, the fuel allowance and the money that comes in, but still it's below the poverty line. So we have to find somewhere that we can live on a means. Bernard Mulvaney, I'm not sure if I'm saying his second name right, he's a big advocate for people with disabilities. And he came out on Twitter a few years ago and he said that it's been proven that €300 a week is living under the poverty line. So if we go to work and we earn more money, we are at risk of losing our medical card. As Saoirse said, the spouse's money will come into play. Even if you're living with somebody, you don't have to be married to them. That comes into context as well. That has to be looked at, and that's just not fair on us.
Can I put to you the specific figures here regarding what you can earn as well, to both of you? Because you understand very much the figures I have in front of me in our statements that we've questioned the Department of Social Protection on. The earnings disregard for disability allowance, they tell me, has increased by almost 38% since Budget 2021 from €120 to €165. And this means that people can earn up to €165 per week and keep their payment in full and earn up to €517.60 per week and keep a portion of their payment. What do you think of that, Amy?
Going from 100, whatever it was, to 160, yeah, okay, it's a rise. But add 160 to 240, so what's that, €400 a week? We still can't live on €400 a week with the price of everything, the cost of living. I'm fortunate enough that I have a car that I can drive. It's kitted out for me with hand controls and stuff, so I have to upkeep a car as well. But like, as Saoirse said, out of that 400, if our wheelchair needed a repair or a call-out fee, it's not sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Saoirse, what do you think? The government tells us the purpose of the means test is to ensure resources are directed to those with the greatest need for income supports. What do you think, Saoirse?
For me, even if there's an increase, they still don't consider the added costs of living with a disability. Yeah, you can add, it's 500, whatever, a week. That's not very much. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't earn much more than that. And I've lost my disability. So, you know what I mean? So they don't really consider how much it actually fully costs altogether when you think about it.
Yeah,
so
like people don't.
I don't think it's enough.
Go on, Amy, yeah.
Sorry, people don't go out and sit outside Leinster House or the Dáil or anything for the sake of it. Like, there was a girl that was interviewed the other day and she's got a physical disability and she earns whatever the disability is, 200 and something, say €250 a week. And when she pays all her bills, she's no money for food. Do you know what I mean? So she goes out, if she goes out and goes to work, like myself, goes out and goes to work, and earns another €160. What happens then when the medication goes up and the price of butter goes up and everything else goes up and then our chairs need repair? We go through tyres. Like, the lifespan of a wheelchair, they say 5 years. But as Saoirse said, mm-hmm. as an active user myself, we could be looking at a new chair every 18, 24 months. And her chair was, what was your chair? €5,500? My chair was €6,500.
€6,500, wow.
Yeah.
And the tyres, €400 each, we heard as well, I think.
So it depends what wheel you get. Like, you know, it's all different. And like Saoirse's physical disability is different to my physical disability. So we have to make sure that each chair, like she said about the car, each chair is made for that person. Do you know what I mean? So they're not just the ones you get in Beaumont Hospital off the porters. They're mm-hmm. not universal. So like, this is where you're at. And as she said about appointments and stuff, physiotherapy money is through the roof. Consultancy, procedures, whether they're big or small, staying in hospital. Your medical card, to be honest with you, your medical card is supposed to get you your wheelchair. But if you're getting a wheelchair every couple of years because they don't have a lifespan in them anymore, your medical card at some point is going to come into question. Like, how much is the limit on your medical card? Because nobody seems to know the answer.
Well, on the medical card, we asked the Department of Health about this as well, and persons under 70 are assessed under the general means-tested medical card thresholds. We're told it's based on an applicant's household income after tax and the deduction of PRSI and the universal social charge, with certain expenses taken into account. And specifically, Amy and Saoirse, you might be interested in this, the issue of granting medical cards on the basis of illness or condition was examined in 2014, but the HSE expert panel on medical need and medical card eligibility concluded it was not feasible or ethically justifiable to list medical conditions in priority order for a medical card. What do you think?
Not bad.
Well, you see, I can understand to a point, because I have friends with hidden disabilities, and you know, they have fight harder than I do to get paying. You know what I mean? So it is harder. The problem in disabilities is you might have a million more things going on, but you don't look to say what they say. My aunt is always, what does disability look like? You
right.
know? But that's the problem. So I do understand, but the means testing, it also, I think it should be like, it should be kind of a thing of where they need to consider case by case basis what that person is going through, what is their mm-hmm. medical. I do think there needs to be kind of a thing of what their medical needs are. What have they needed yeah. in the past? What will they need in the future? Like, I have arthritis in my neck and I require pain injections, which will get worse as I get older. I'm 34 now. I've told in my 40s, that's when I require more pain relief or surgery. So, do you know what I mean? These are things I'm considering.
I wonder how much those injections would cost, Saoirse.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't want to put that on my spouse. I don't want to, that's unfair. In my opinion, I don't want to put on him. You know what I mean? I don't want to be a burden to him. I know he wouldn't think that, but I would feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what should be an exciting him in my life is giving me anxiety and worry.
What should be exciting in your life is giving you anxiety.
Yeah. That's yeah. awful, isn't it? It is. It's awful. And, Saoirse, you mentioned the long-term illness book. I'm not sure if people are aware what the long-term illness book is. It's basically what it says, but there's a lot of stuff that comes under the long-term illness book. So personally for myself, it would be like catheters and tubes and bags and stuff like that. But there's a medication on it. There's medication that are exempt from that long-term illness book. And one of those medications is a pill for anxiety. And anxiety is not just short lived, you know, mental health mm-hmm. as well. There's a lot of mental health issues that come with having a physical disability. We didn't ask for this, you know what I mean? Like we,
of course,
every case is different. But that's what bugs me is little things like, well, how come this bit is covered but this bit isn't?
Stay with me, please, you know? Amy and Saoirse, if you can. 51551 if you want to get in on this, listeners, or 0818715815. Thea, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, John. How
and
are
thanks
you?
I'm very well. Thank you for getting in touch. How are you?
I'm good.
Tell
Thank
me a little bit more about
that.
Your situation, please.
I'm a fully blind lady and I'm fairly independent. I'm living out here in Sandy Cove. I'm looking at things for like training. I think people with any disability, but I'm talking only from my experience, could do with more training for the workplace. You know, in terms of technology, I would have a computer that has speech on it, or my phone would have speech on it. But I think in the workplace, you'd need more training to make things accessible. And I'm talking both employer and employee to make it fair on both sides. I think more training in mobility around a workplace, but skills. I don't think we're being offered enough training and skills to offer employees. I beg your pardon, employers.
Mm-hmm. And Thea, what's been your experience? Yeah. So have you been finding this in a job or while looking for work?
Well, I've only looked for work for a little bit and then I felt, certainly in my experience, I wasn't being able to, I certainly hadn't benefited quite enough in fourth year. I benefited most in terms of learning things from certain workplaces. But I just felt that in the real working life, as it were, I didn't have enough to offer them. And that I also couldn't get enough done in a day. I was being offered to order things and maybe read papers, possibly summarise papers. And I know I could have done more than that, but with more training.
Mm-hmm. And were the facilities there that you talk about, like the technology?
There was technology and they were very good in advance of my coming, of getting in touch with, say, the National Council for the Blind. And they supplied very well. But I think it just wasn't right in terms of the job. It wasn't, there wasn't enough for me to do in a day.
You didn't feel challenged enough, Thea, it sounds like.
No, No, not at all. And not a meaningful enough role. I just felt really I could have given more back to the team and or the, you know, the people at the top as well.
Mm-hmm. And when you want to give more and you feel like you can't, that's difficult.
Yeah. It is tricky. And I think I could have worked very good half days if I've been trained up enough. But I think this could be anywhere, John. I think we do need to get training for any walk of life. You can't fill out a CAO form without knowing what you can offer first.
Mm-hmm. And Saoirse, do you feel these supports are there for you in the workplace to challenge you, to make you feel an active part of the team you work with? We've a problem with Saoirse's line, but that's okay. We'll come back to it. I know, Amy, for you, you feel it's not there or it's not feasible right now for you. That's why you're involved in voluntary work. But people, be it you, Amy, Saoirse, Thea, you have more, Amy, to offer.
Absolutely. We have so much to offer because at the end of the day, we're all human beings. It doesn't matter how we get around or how we navigate through life. We can still do it. And what I hear from the lady that's speaking there, it's like, I will just give you this much to do because, you know, that'll do you sort of thing. It's like, no, challenge me to do more. Like, you know, and some employers should expect more from their employees as well. But at the same time, are they kind of cushioning it to a sense of, oh, the lady has she's blind, like, so she can only do so much. That lady knows herself how much she can do, and I know what I can do, and Saoirse knows what she can do. But yes, actually, you know, I fully agree there should be more training when it comes to it, and not just the, oh, here you go, here's 12 hours a week for you, just to keep you going. I get so much from volunteering. It's so rewarding. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So like Saoirse said, to keep busy.
And to be honest, you know, it wouldn't be fair on the rest of the team either. So if you're put into a very serious team and you're only going to be doing, as I say, reading the paper, ordering toilet roll and coffee, which is important too if you were in the housekeeping team.
Yeah.
And I genuinely think that is an important role. But if you're not in the correct role, I'm all for doing it in maintenance, but I would be for doing other jobs if you're not in maintenance.
Okay, you need the support, you need the training, as you said, Thea, there as well. And the understanding as well, I think, too. Thank you all for helping us to understand that a little bit more today as you put out your calls for Budget 2026 and more support to allow people with disabilities to play a more active role in the workplace that you've made it very clear you want to. Thank you to Thea, to Amy and to Saoirse. Good luck with the wedding plan, Saoirse, as well. If you want to get involved in the conversation, at liveline@rte.ie and 51551 for your texts.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
If you want to tell me what you had for lunch or if you had any strange sandwich combinations. Daniel, what about you? Did you have a crisp sandwich?
John, how are you? I didn't have a crisp sandwich today, but I'm going to have a crisp sandwich very soon, I think. I'm craving one now, talking about all these sandwiches.
And was it Colin Farrell and Margot Robbie they sharing our culinary secrets with the world about a good old crisp sandwich that inspired you?
Funny enough, I was actually influenced by it. So I actually went out to the shop when I got the bits and pieces to make it. And it satisfied me. But I think sandwiches have taken a different turn in recent events or in recent years. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, yeah, because we've got very fancy, haven't we? But sometimes keeping it simple and just putting something between your bread and that all-important butter as well can be just as good.
Well, I mean, I remember when I first started on TikTok and Instagram, I started doing some crazy food combinations, and I actually deep-fried a crisp sandwich before. And I also deep-fried the nation's favourite chicken fillet roll. Could you believe that?
As if it couldn't be better for your health.
I remember the video very, very clearly. I just squeezed the sandwich and the roll and the oil was just kind of, you know, dripping off it. And it was gaining all these likes and comments. And I said, you know, I think I'm onto something here. And I said, you know, people have this, you know, attraction to food that was deep-fried. But
how did it taste?
Back to the sandwiches. How did it taste? You know, I actually didn't take a bite of it because I was actually scared looking at it. I was scared.
Because I think what I like about looking at these videos of people with their crisp sandwiches is that the crunch, the nice fresh bread and the crunchy crisps, that's what you want. I think something would be lost in the deep fat fryer there, Daniel.
Yeah, there's nothing beats a bit of good quality butter and some crisps on a sandwich. But the real thing is, everything online now, people are, they're making, like, you know, pasta carbonara sandwiches, mac and cheese sandwiches. They're putting their favourite dinners in between two slices of bread. This is the norm now.
They're putting pasta into bread. It's a carbohydrate special carbs there.
Carbs on carbs. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, people just love the ASMR, the crunch. And I think once you put it into a sandwich, it just changes the whole dimension of it all, doesn't it?
There's something to it. I like a good old-fashioned humble potato, never mind the potato crisps, but slice up a potato, I mean, and put it into your sandwich.
Now, here's one for the nation now, right? What if you were to make a boxty, like potato bread, and then have all your sandwich stuff inside that? Now, that would be revolutionary.
That would be delicious. Sounds good. You'll have to do that one for us. So,
we definitely will. We definitely will. What is your favourite type of sandwich, actually?
The more the merrier. I love a good. Well, I was actually posting about this on my Instagram and X there for listeners. All I had was cheese on brown bread. I do like the brown bread. I do like soda bread in particular. But I did have to explain to my colleagues in the Liveline team that I do like to slice a potato in there, a bit of salt, add a little bit more to it. And I said it maybe comes from the college days of putting potato waffles and things like that into your bread to maybe bulk it up and make it feel like a meal.
Well, I remember my college days now, but actually they weren't too long ago now. I'm only 30 now, but back when I was in my early 20s, what we used to do was, right, we didn't have a lot of money in college, so what we did was we actually used to go to the local supermarket in the area, and we'd go down there about 7-8 o'clock in the evening time, and what they would do is they would actually reduce the price of the bread at that time. So, you know, we would go down and spend our pennies in there, get the bread. Now, it didn't matter if it was stale, because we were toasting it anyway.
There you go.
You know, so then we had our cream cheese. We had our two different types of cheddar. So we had the white cheddar, the red cheddar. And look, if we had a bit of money that week, we'd probably put a bit of Parmesan in there as well, you know.
Flashy.
So we would toast that. And then we would also fill it. I actually have a cookbook called Lush. This sandwich is actually in it. We also fill it with instant noodles. Okay, and then we would toast it, and I'm telling you, it's one of the most weirdest satisfying cravings that I've ever had, and it's spectacular.
Are we talking about like a pot noodle sandwich here? So,
okay, pot noodle sandwich, yeah, pot noodle sandwich.
Uh huh. Sounds a bit messy too. I'm thinking.
It's messy, but like, you know, there's different, people make pot noodles different ways. Some people like it saucy, some people like the kind of dry pot noodle. But when you're mixing it with cheese, the cheese soaks up the sauce, the starch from the noodles come out, and it kind of binds this sandwich together. You have to try it.
I think I will. 51551 for whatever you're having yourself. Stay with us, Daniel. Declan, you're listening to Daniel Lambert there giving us his recipes for sandwiches. What do you think?
I'm absolutely starving after listening to that. I mean, you just can't beat fresh bread with pure butter and King crisps. Absolutely heaven on earth. But has anyone ever tried stew on day two in a sandwich, in a buttered white bread sandwich? Oh my God, it's orgasmic on the tongue. The taste in your mouth. My wife sees my eyes rolling to the back of my head as I dig into the stew sandwich. She just cannot believe what I'm doing.
I can relate to that. What you can do is you can actually get cob bread, okay? Take out all the bread. You can use that for croutons, and you can fill the whole loaf of bread with the stew. And, you can have the bread act as a bowl.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Fantastic.
Your mouth is watering, Declan.
Oh, the mouth is always watering, but it tastes in the mouth. But what a lot of people, when I get a sandwich or when I get a wrap in my local garage, right, McKeown's and Kells, right? I'm usually starving because I'm coming back from my Cold Lake swim and would have a tomato wrap, garlic mayo on one side and, on one part of it, and relish on the other. And I'd have tuna, I'd have lettuce, I'd have beetroot, and
everything but the kitchen sink is going in here.
Red onions. Well, I can tell you something, that the effect on my mouth would be on fire with the tastes. Absolutely on fire. And because I was trained in yoga teaching years ago, you chew your food very, very slowly. and you actually feel your eyes rolling back to your head, the pleasure of eating that wrap with all those rich tastes.
Declan, I feel like I'm eating it with you the way you're describing it there.
But you have to savour your food. And what most people don't realise is the person making the sandwich is very important. If it's thrown at you and it's thrown together, it's like the box-produced sandwiches that come out of the plant. But if the person making the sandwich has a good spiritual connection and is actually making that sandwich with care, love and attention and is listening to what you're saying, and you can see them making up the wrap and is that enough for you and so on. You know, the richness and the spirituality of the person who makes the sandwich actually adds to the taste. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if that is absent, otherwise the sandwich tastes so dull.
You can't just wing it. So, Agnes, what about you? 51551 if you want to get in touch with us, or 0818715815. Agnes, have you ever felt a spiritual connection to a crisp sandwich?
Absolutely not. I'm going to shock the nation now on Liveline. I've never eaten a crisp sandwich.
What?
I can't cope with them. No, I've never eaten a crisp sandwich, or I've never had a chicken roll.
Agnes.
Chicken in a brioche. No, I just can't. I just think there's other ways that I can spend my calories. I prefer to have like green and colour in my sandwiches. BLTs, like I agree with the flavours. And the other thing I like to be able to do with the sandwich is actually get my mouth around it. So an awful lot of those sandwiches that Declan was talking about, you can't actually put this, they're so messy. They're not for a white shirt day, you know, that kind of way.
It's a good point.
Unless you want to wear your lunch.
And Declan, you said your wife was watching on as you were trying to get that stew sandwich into your mouth. Was she watching on in horror as it dribbled down your chin onto your shirt?
Well, she does watch on in horror, right? But I mean, I love so many different tastes, right? I almost have she inherited a whole load of aprons from an aunt of hers who died in Monaghan a few years ago.
Okay.
And I got to put those aprons. I've even got one in the car, right? Because it is so messy. But it really, I appreciate the fact that you're trying to get the sandwich into your mouth as well. That's why wraps are very useful, because they're so...
Well, yeah, exactly. And it's the convenience of a sandwich and being able to do that. But I do agree with you that when somebody takes a little bit of care making the food for you, it actually is far better. And I'm going to put something out there. This is a bog standard basic sandwich that we're getting wrong up and down the country.
Okay, Agnes.
A toasted ham and cheese sandwich. Can we actually melt the cheese in the toasted ham and cheese sandwich instead of getting lukewarm, limp, half-toasted sandwiches? Can we get one that is actually toasted properly on the outside, where the cheese is almost molten and the ham then, good, nice ham, and that you get a bit of warmth, particularly coming into the autumn and the winter. Now, you can have your tomato or your onion with it, that's entirely, but can we melt the cheese as a nation in the ham, the toasted cheese sandwich?
Have you sent them back? Have you sent them back, Agnes? So you sound annoyed about this.
Oh, well, I have. I sent them back and said, no, can I actually have it toasted? Can I have it melted?
And what kind of reaction did you get from the person who had a spiritual connection to it when they were making it?
Well, they didn't have any spiritual connection when I sent it back anyway. I can tell you that for nothing. But we didn't fall out. Let's put it like that.
Pretty good.
We solved the problem, and I was happy, and they felt much better about their work when they saw the delight on my face and the molten sandwich in it, the molten cheese. But I mean, the whole idea for a toasted, like, you know, going right back now, this is before my college days were a little bit longer ago, but going back to the days when you got a toasted ham and cheese sandwich or a toasted special in a pub at lunchtime, you know, if you're in college, out of the plastic bag. I don't know if any of you remember that.
I do.
The best sandwich in the entire world, when you're maybe watching a match or something on a Saturday afternoon, there is nothing quite like that. Now, a packet of potatoes with it, I can cope with that, but not the potatoes in the bread.
I'm telling you, you haven't lived. You have to squash those crisps down. You have to hear the crunch.
I do love crisps. Yeah, I know. And I appreciate all of that from a sensory perspective as well. All of these things, you know, the fat, the salt, the carb, all of that and the crunch all makes it really unctuous and fabulous, but I just can't do it. I haven't been able to do it ever. I just look at it and go, I don't get it. I just don't get it. But I do like a BLT as well. I don't know if anybody else likes them.
I'm noticing a pattern here as well. When we talk about poor college days too, hunger is the best sauce, I think, as well. Maybe that's what made that sandwich so special out of the plastic wrapper that you mentioned.
Isn't it?
When you really needed it. I'm mindful myself of how people used to say, and I've been that soldier, that sandwiches never tasted as good as they did on the bog many years ago or when you were working hard too.
Well, if I don't, or be my old, you know.
51551 if you want to get in touch with us on this, and stay with us, please, if you can. Mary, what's your favourite sandwich, Mary?
Oh, John, it has to be the chip butty. Plenty of salt and vinegar on them with loads of butter.
Definitely.
You need the butter dribbling down your chin.
Plenty of carbs there as well. Do you put on an apron or a bib like we heard from
Declan earlier? Not at all. And another one I'll throw into the pot is a fish finger sandwich.
Fish finger sandwich. That is a classic. That was a college staple for me, actually, as well. You're bringing me back.
No, it's all memories. On a Friday, we used everyone like from school to go to the chip shop. And a family moved home from England and started doing the chip butties at lunchtime. Like, because the regular Irish chip shops, I don't think I've ever seen them in them.
And you thought they were very cosmopolitan.
All the kids would go in. Yeah. No, it was lovely. You go get your chip butty on a Friday.
Right.
You know, it was amazing, tasty.
Made the chips go a bit further as well if you were sharing them round too, didn't it?
Yeah. No. Staple diet, you know, back in them days.
Plenty of carbs.
Now you have it.
Plenty of salt, plenty of butter.
Yeah,
and have you tried crisps? Or it's
oh yeah,
is,
no,
is it
I've
as good? Is it as good
sandwich.
A feeling?
Oh no, because you don't get any dribbles down your chin from crisps. you need the butter and the hot chips to do that.
There you go, Agnes. Some people want the mess.
I know, when I was in school as well, lots of people like were around me doing it. It was just something about it. I didn't get it. And again, I think I'm missing out in the whole culinary world. I've never had a chip sandwich either, a chip butty. It's just the bread and the chips together. I think it's the fat. I like bread, proper bread, like lovely fresh bread, granary bread, white bread, bloomer, any sort of bread you want. I will absolutely have that with some sort of meat, veg, something tart in it. But I just in my head, it just does not compute. I can't do it. I'll try one maybe and come back to you and let you know how I get on.
Oh, please do. Mary, what do you think? Agnes has never had a chip butty. What should she do this evening?
She hasn't lived. I'm telling you now, she needs to try one.
I might. I'll wrap my head around it. I'm sure lots of people are going to offer them to me in my place of work soon. Yeah.
Now, but they have to be nice soggy chips, not crispy ones.
Good point. Bit of a squash chip.
Yeah, they have to be the soggy ones, not crispy ones.
What is your favourite sandwich, Agnes?
Well, I love a BLT, but recently a friend of mine got a recipe from New York and then McDonald's. She's really good at coming up with new culinary things. So it was just a lovely tuna. But for me, the unusual part was that there was celery in it, almonds, some raisins and some capers and olives. So it was just very unusual. But it was the whole concept now is the opposite to other people, what we were speaking about. It was less is more. It was just a little thin bit of a small bit of filling with a little bit of rocket, that mixture in a bit of focaccia. Delish.
That does sound delicious, but it's awfully fancy, Agnes.
It is, but it is. And sometimes I'm just a little bit fancy, but that's okay. You know, one has to, like, if I can do something nice like that, I can have it, I'll take it. But coronation chicken isn't a million miles away from that, and that's around for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. That's
pretty
another
tasty
lovely
too.
Sandwich.
Izzy, good afternoon to you. 51551 if other listeners want to get in touch. Izzy, what do you think?
Good afternoon, John. Well, I have to promote. I'm from the Dacia. And for people who don't know what the Dacia is, Waterford. I'm from Waterford City.
Great place.
And our famous... Oh, thank you, John. Our place, our favourite is the Blah. The Waterford Blah. Have you ever had one, John?
I have indeed, yeah. But for anyone who doesn't know the delights of the Waterford Blah, will you describe to me what makes it different from a bap or a bread roll anywhere else in the country?
Right. Okay, I hope I can describe it right now. I'll have Waterford people giving out to me. Well, it's like a round bap for all the world, but it's beautiful soft dough. It's doughy and you could have a floury blah. You could have a soft blah, or my favourite is a crusty blah, almost burnt, like a real crispy burnt blah.
Sorry, does that not go against now the idea of the blah? Because you started out telling me it has to be the soft roll, but now you're gone crispy.
No, no, I didn't say that you'd have to. It's okay. Your preference.
I just want to stick within the Waterford rules, that's all.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Well, they're part of the Waterford rules. Like, they're the different types. You could have a crispy blah, or you could have a soft one. And you'd know when they're in the packet, or you'd know when, if they're out, you'd know which one that your preference is. Like, there's three different, there's three bakeries. There's Harney's. Very famous, the Harney's, Hickey's Blas, Real Waterford, and you have M&D Bakery as well. And also, our Bla is featured on the Shelburne Hotel menu.
There you have it. You can't argue with that, Izzy. Here's for the Waterford Bla then. But what do you put in it? Crisps?
Everyone to their own. I do love Tato crisps, cheese and onion. Now, that's really gorgeous if you really want to pig out. Mm-hmm. But I do love a maple favourite rasher and maybe a bit of ketchup or a bit of relish. You could throw in a bit of cheese. Now, my favourite is Dubliner. Did you ever hear of red lead? Now, that's the famous one in Waterford. It's luncheon sausage meat. Kind of a pinky colour, pinkish reddish colour meat, processed meat, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's very tasty. And if you get it fresh in any of the supermarkets, you know, Arkene stores or Super Value, they sell it.
You're getting all the names in here now, Izzy. I hope you must be getting blahs and cheese and crisps sent to you from all over Waterford at this stage.
So. I hope so. You can pick up my address from Lifeline there, please, folks.
We have lots more people getting in touch to tell us what they're putting on their sandwiches and how they do it. 51551 if you want to get in touch on sugar sandwiches and frying your bread on the pan and all sorts of things. Give us a call.
Lifeline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Maria, what happened on the bus from Skibbereen to Dublin?
Oh, John, listening to all those stories, it's fantastic. Many years ago when I worked in Dublin, oh, my God, the best sandwich in the whole world is two slices of white, fresh John Fields bread from Skibbereen, a Tato sandwich, cheese and onion, and Cadbury plain chocolate. It is heaven. And, you know, on a Sunday when I'd be heading back to Dublin because you'd be at home for the weekend.
Yeah.
And you'd have your flask of tea, Barry's tea, washed down with Barry's tea. That is heaven, John. You have to try it.
I don't know, Maria, because I am trying to take it all in and I'm not a chocolate and crisps combination person, but you're putting it into a sandwich.
Oh, my God. Absolutely, John. Beautifully with proper butter. And, you know, I used to live in Australia many years ago. And I can tell you, if people are listening to this from Australia, their mouths will be salivating because they don't do bread as good, they don't do crisps as good, and they don't do John Fields bread. It is heaven, honestly. You'll have to try it.
Were you very hungry on that bus, though, as well, and kind of cold, and the engine was sort of vibrating, you were sitting near the wheels, you know, I'm thinking it all plays a role, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely, John, and you're miserable, and you're not sure when would you get home again, and I was a student nurse, and we worked really hard.
It's raining.
But I can tell you, it's raining, and like there was no freeway, you were going all the back roads. And it was heaven. It was really, really comfort. I honestly now, and it's bringing me right back listening to all the stories.
And I think you said something even more controversial there for me, because I don't think tea ever tasted good from a flask.
Oh, it does. Oh, my God, John. Absolutely. Have you ever gone to, I'm afraid to have mentioned the All-Ireland, but going to an All-Ireland when Cork are playing or a Munster final,
right,
when Cork hurlers are playing, it is heaven. It is heaven. Honestly, there's nothing like it. When you're starving and having that packet of crisps, oh my God. And even adding to any of the ham sandwiches.
But the tea, doesn't it get kind of stale and kind of old?
No. You must look at your flask, John. Do you look after your flasks?
You know, you raise a good point, because if you looked at my keep cup in my car, it sort of has a lot of tea stains from probably a few years back there. No, I generally just keep it topped up as I keep going.
No, you have to mind your flask. And if you mind your flask with beautiful hot water and have your Barry's tea bag, I can tell you it's heaven. And fair play, I have to say, fair play to Colin Farrell for mentioning it, because I saw him interviewed by Patrick Keelty and I thought, you know what, fair play. And he loves it and he speaks about what he loves. Isn't that wonderful?
For putting the humble Irish crisp sandwich on the global
Absolutely.
Map. Absolutely. Well, Maria, you've done it for chocolate and crisps today. Thanks very much for getting in touch with us on that.
Thanks, John. Thank you.
Paddy Joe, good afternoon.
John, good man, and thanks very much, John, for having me on your programme.
Delighted
and hello
to talk
everyone
to you.
Out there all around. I want to share this with you, John, and the nation. Had you ever a banjo sandwich?
A banjo sandwich?
Aye. Did you ever have one, John?
I don't think so.
I think, well, wait now, and I'll gently explain it. A banjo sandwich is your favourite sandwich. Okay, whatever, let it be, whatever it is. And you could put, and whatever your salad cream or your mayonnaise or your tomato sauce or ketchup or whatever. And when you have your favourite sandwich made, and you take, and then you put your dressing on it, and you put a decent amount on it because you're starving, and you put a right good shot into it. And it's usually, John, when you're dressed up and you're going to a function and you're all dressed up with your new shirt and your tie that you're not used to putting on and you're going out. And the next thing, you take a massive bite out of your sandwich and the salad cream or the ketchup comes down on your shirt. And the first thing you do, John, then, is you go with your fingers to try and wipe it off as if you're playing a banjo. And then, unfortunately, if you're out somewhere where the... Sometimes when you might pick up a tissue and the tissue could be coloured and you try and wipe it and you make a div load altogether. And John, that's when you had a banjo sandwich, when you're trying to get the sauce off your beautiful shirt and a bit of it on your tie and maybe a bit of it on your jacket. And that's when you're having a banjo sandwich and you wouldn't have known it. It's a disaster.
I love the way, Paddy Joe, you can make a virtue of it. The rest of us rubbing that sauce into our shirt might be stressed out about it or worried. You think it's something to celebrate.
I think it's magic, because there's a child in us all, and it's grand making a mess, and because it's being too dressed up. I hate being too dressed up. I love you're going to a formal function and we feel awkward anyway, and as part of the awkwardness, having the banjo sandwich, the day is complete when you have it, John.
It probably is hid well by your Roscommon jersey, Paddy Joe, because I think you were wearing that the last time I met you. How's life since retirement in the barbershop?
Ah, great, John. Now, gee, lovely. Now, I'm mighty now, like I'm enjoying it. Well, I'd sooner go down on my new shirt and my tie than the jersey. I'd hate it to go on the jersey, so I would. But retirement is lovely now. God, it's great. Thank God now, and it's great now.
Very good. Well, enjoy it all, Paddy Joe. And thanks very much for telling us about your banjo sandwich today. Madeline, what about you?
Me, I'm afraid mine is very simple in comparison to all these exotic and unctuous fillings.
Simple can be best sometimes.
Simple. Cheddar cheese and jam.
Cheddar cheese and jam.
I'm afraid that's as good as it gets.
And what kind of jam?
Just any kind of jam is gorgeous with cheddar cheese.
Are you talking about one of these fancy chutneys or red onion marmalade or things like that?
No,
relish?
Just ordinary raspberry, strawberry, blackcurrant, any kind of cheddar cheese you like.
Sugary, sweet jam and cheese.
At school when we were in, I was in school over 50 years ago, nearly 60 years ago. So, like, when you're starving in boarding school and you're living on shepherd's pie and dried out turnips, you come up with something. So cheddar cheese and jam it was.
Madeline, I love the way you spat out the dried out turnips there. I think you can still taste them.
Oh, absolutely. I can't bear the look of a turnip even. Never mind it cooked.
Hunger was so definitely part of the sauce there, so.
Would you like to hear a nice little poem?
What poem have you got for me, Madeline?
It's about food, needless to say.
Oh, go on, yeah.
It's in a wrap style.
Oh, you're doing a wrap for us too, Madeline. Even better.
A wrap, yeah. Yummy, yummy, yummy. I love food in my tummy, especially all the stuff that's bad for me. Who says that crisps, sweets, biscuits and bread ain't good for me, ain't good for me? My tummy was a rumble when into it did tumble all the bad, bad food that wasn't good for me. I got a pain like no other and a warning from me mother, don't treat your poor old tummy like it's in a rugby scrummy. That's about it.
Go, Madeline. Go, Madeline.
I'm hearing all those things. I think people will have a pain in their tummy tonight.
Madeline, I did not think we would be rapping on Live Line today, but it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for that. When is the album coming out?
Good. Oh, the album, oh, I'll think up a few more. I often come up with poems just off the, you know, my sister was in hospital recently. And, you know, you can have dark humour when somebody is ill.
You need it sometimes.
I came up with a few words, yeah. Anyway,
Madeline,
it's a good programme.
Thanks very much. And all the very best to your sister as well and to your family. Josephine, thanks for getting in touch as well. 51551 for your texts if you want to get involved in the conversation today. What about you, Josephine?
Well, I have a very tame one to tell you, but a very delicious one. I happen to be in Kilcock from time to time. I go out there walking along the canal and I went with my pal yesterday to Timeless Cafe. And they do their most delicious sandwich, which is comprised of butternut squash, feta cheese, honeyed almonds, roasted honey almonds, and another little spicy addition, which I can't really kind of describe too easily, on focaccia bread. It is out of this world.
It sounds delicious.
Yeah, they're a small little cafe, and by gosh, do they know how to prepare food. They have beautiful food generally, but particularly this sandwich is on its own. And there's no chance of it becoming a banjo sandwich because there's no tomato ketchup or anything like that. but it's amazing how passionate we are about sandwiches. Who knew?
Oh, isn't it just? I think we all have an opinion when it comes to our tummies, as Madeline was rapping about there as well. It sounds like there's a spiritual connection to the sandwiches in Kilcock there too. So thanks for telling us about
as
well.
That's all. You're welcome. Thank you, John.
I'm thinking with the banjo sandwich that as someone who drives a lot and dines by the dashboard, as one man in a cafe told me one day, I want the sandwiches cut properly, please, or the wraps right down the middle so I don't drop all the fillings down my shirt. So there's my bugbear now. And Agnes, who was talking to us earlier on, wants to launch a campaign for proper melted cheese on her toasted specials and BLTs as well. 51551 for your texts.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
From rapping about our sandwiches and those strange combinations to something very different, where scientists claim they've made a pivotal step in bringing back the dodo for the first time in 300 years. Conor O'Brien, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm very well, Conor. And we know, you're as dead as a dodo, people tell us, but not so, it seems.
Yes, well, look, it's the technology that has been spoken about is called de-extinction. So basically, it's where scientists are trying to extract DNA from species that have been extinct and attempting to use that in order to recreate species that are long lost with the view to reintroducing them back into their natural habitats. The dodo was obviously a bird that's, you know, lived thousands of kilometres away, was confined to the island of Mauritius. But Ireland, too, has lost species that could be, a contender for this process. And one of them is the great auk, which is a flightless bird that became extinct in the middle of the 1800s and very sadly is lost to Ireland now.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about that and other creatures as well, Conor. Tell me about your own interest or where it came from in particular in the lost species of Ireland or our extinct creatures.
Yes, absolutely. So I've always had an interest in natural history. I've really been bird watching since as long as I can remember, really. And when you visit the Natural History Museum in Dublin, the Dead Zoo, as it's known to generations of Dubliners, you're obviously awestruck by the incredible giant Irish deer that greet you upon entering the museum. And then you have specimens of of all the species that Ireland once had, still
the big
had,
elk is what
had.
Everyone knows
exactly.
it for, I suppose.
That's it, exactly. Yeah, the giant Irish elk. But also behind that, you have stuffed specimens of creatures that were lost to Ireland for generations, the likes of the white-tailed eagle, you know, the corn bunting, which tragically now is another bird that is lost to Ireland, became extinct in the 1990s. And really, when it was kind of a combination of those things and a passion for extinct animals, really. And I wanted to kind of unwind their stories from an Irish perspective, take a look at some of the creatures that have become lost to Ireland over the centuries and look at the factors that led to their demise.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the white-tailed sea eagle there. I've spoken many times and covered the story regarding the reintroduction projects in places like County Clare and other places along Lough Derg, as I recall, about reintroducing the white-tailed sea eagle. And there's been some success in projects like that. But when you talk about the great auk, I've never heard of it.
No, it's well, it's a bird that's not really known to very many people. And obviously the reason for that is because no one alive has seen one. It's been extinct since 1844. And the last Irish specimen was caught off the coast of County Waterford in 1834. And it's now in Trinity College, Dublin. It's one of fewer than 80 specimens left in the whole world. So extremely, extremely precious, that stuffed specimen. But the great auk was an extremely interesting creature. It was the only flightless bird that Ireland had. It looked very much like a penguin, which is basically as a result of them living similar lifestyles. It was a sea-going bird, made the ultimate sacrifice of losing the ability to fly so that it could make really deep dives under the water. But sadly, without the ability to fly, that made it much more vulnerable when it came to land. And so the island colonies that it had spread across the North Atlantic were exploited heavily by humans over the centuries, which very tragically led to their demise.
And it looked like a penguin. I'm just trying to picture this in my mind. I know so many people who love penguins and love the way they look, but
exactly.
Quite similar.
Quite similar. It was much more closely. It wasn't related to penguins at all. It was basically you have a phenomenon in nature called convergent evolution, which is where unrelated animals basically look alike because they live a similar lifestyle. And the great auk is a very interesting example of this. So it looked very much like a penguin, black on top, white on the stomach. Stood very upright, very small, dumpy wings. So as you can imagine, just from that description, very, very similar to a penguin, but not related to a penguin at all. Its closest relatives will be things like guillemots, razorbills and puffins, which are all birds that we still have around the coast of Ireland today. But the great auk was the only flightless member of that family, and indeed the only flightless bird that we had in Ireland, which I suppose makes its demise all the more tragic, really, because we lost something so unique. And tragically, we haven't had an opportunity to see it again, and who knows if we ever will.
And that doesn't exist anywhere in the world.
No, completely gone. The last specimens were known to have been killed in Iceland in 1844. There were still occasional sightings after that. Two of them were thought to have been seen actually in Belfast Lough the following year, but that sighting hasn't been confirmed. As I said, the last Irish specimen was caught in off Ballymacaw, which is off Brownstown Head near Tramore in County Waterford, in 1834. Mm-hmm. It was kept alive for a couple of months, and then when it died, it was eventually found its way into the zoological collection in Trinity College Dublin, where it has remained ever since.
Uh-huh. And you writing as well, Conor, about the corn bunting. Is this like the corn crake?
It's like the corn crake in the sense that it's a farmland bird. They're not very closely related. The corn bunting is much more related to things like sparrows and finches.
Right.
And while we still have the corn crake in very remote parts of the West and the offshore islands, the corn bunting is really gone. It's an extinct bird in Ireland now. And I suppose what's most tragic about that is while the likes of the great auk went extinct well over 100 years ago, the corn bunting only became extinct in much more recent times, really only in the 1990s. So there are still people in Ireland today, sadly I'm not one of them, but there are still people in Ireland today who can remember a time when corn bunting could be heard singing from telegraph wires in remote areas of the West in farmland. But sadly, changes to their habitat over the decades led to their demise. So
do you know what it sounded like,
Conor? Lost to Ireland. It had a very, very unique song that sounded like a jangling of a set of keys. So it had a very sort of metallic sound to the way it sang. Like I said, if you hold up a set of keys, if you jangle them, that's more or less the closest approximation to what it would have sounded like. So quite a melodic sound would have been very well known to people who would have worked in the fields in generations past. But like I said, sadly, a bird that's lost to Ireland now. It can still be found in Britain and in continental Europe, But no longer here, I'm afraid.
51551, if listeners remember that, because you said there would be people out there who may have seen or heard the corn bunting as well. There was controversy when we talked about reintroducing wolves to Ireland. What about the grey wolf?
Well, it's the grey wolf was obviously a species that was very, very, you know, had a very, very prominent place in Irish folklore and in Irish culture. You know, if you see wolves mentioned in stories relating to St. Patrick, and stories pertaining to the Fianna. So obviously, you know, a creature that was very left a very indelible mark in Irish legend and Irish myth. Ireland once had one of the densest populations of wolves in the whole of Europe, really, up until the 1600s, when you would have seen a really concerted effort to exterminate wolves across Ireland. Professional wolf hunters would have been brought in. The accoutrements that were needed to catch wolves began to be provided, often at public expense. And then that, combined with the loss of the great forests of Ireland between 1600, from 1600 on, that you saw the kind of great clearance of the last great swathes of forests across Ireland, really. And that, combined with the systematic hunting, really brought an end to Ireland's wolves. And the last one that we know of perished in County Carlow on Mount Leinster in 1786. So, yeah, that's certainly an animal that's lost to Ireland now, making a resurgence, I should say, across much of Europe again, with legal protection. Obviously, that's not, you know, welcomed by everyone. And look, it's obviously with such a large predator, with potential to do damage to livestock, and indeed wolves do kill quite a few livestock and have done so in parts of Europe. So
Sorry, Conor. Finally, I just wanted to ask you, as you speak with such pride about these Irish native creatures, the pine marten was on the brink of extinction, but not always a popular creature out there in the countryside.
No, not always a popular creature out there in the countryside. And look, they are creatures that can do damage to things like hen houses. It certainly is a risk with them. At the same time, you know, they are a native creature. They are part of our natural heritage, and they do have a place within the Irish ecosystem. And we actually have seen the benefits of that, in the sense that they have helped to bring the population of grey squirrels, which was an introduced species, into Ireland. They have helped to bring that under control, and that has helped the red squirrel, which is a native animal to Ireland. So, you know, that's a wonderful example of, you know, the natural balance within the ecosystem starting to reassert itself as a result of a natural predator being back there again.
Conor, thanks very much. It's fascinating. Liveline at rte.ie if you want to get in touch. There's always mixed opinions about the pine marten and other creatures as well. Author Conor O'Brien there, 51551.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
And Breda, you're still in the mood for a sandwich. Tell me what you fancy.
My mouth is watering listening to your show today. I'm actually going to Super Value. I'm doing a school collection here, and we're going to Super Value so I can get soft rolls, some Hanley's corned beef, and we've brown sauce at home to go with it. And I can't wait to get home.
Oh, it sounds delicious. Do you think you can get good corned beef nowadays? Because that's one I remember from childhood. And I remember some of my family hated it. I loved it. But I don't know that I'd ever know where to find good corned beef.
Hanley's corned beef is the nicest that I've ever tasted.
Uh-huh.
It is absolutely beautiful. And I was recently in Dick's Super Value in Charleville, and I was saying to the girls at the deli counter how much I love that. So they were getting me to taste the other corned beef to see if I like that as much. But it's the Hanley's one is just amazing.
Breed, I'll have to try it. Can I ask you briefly, because I know you've got the school run, can you get the kids to eat it? Because I find it hard to get the kids to put actual things in their sandwiches other than peanut butter or Nutella or something like that.
Now, I have to say my child is a very good eater and she loves it. Now, she'd eat it with white bread, whereas I prefer it with the soft roll.
Okay, I'll try that. So, Breda, better go get those kids. Thanks a million for talking to us.
Antoinette,
good afternoon.
And can I say... Sorry,
Breda, go on.
Just say, It's SNA Appreciation Day today, and I'm here outside Davis College in Mallow, and the SNAs are absolutely amazing.
They do such great work. I'm going to shout out loud with you in support on that one. Loud and clear, Breda. We were talking about the great work that special needs assistants do in our schools earlier on in the week on Liveline as well. And let's hear it for the SNAs and the huge difference they make in the lives of our children there throughout the country as well. I hope they have a nice weekend too. Antoinette, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you? And I agree there about the SNAs. They do a fantastic job in all our schools throughout the country. So I'd like to support them today as well.
Of course. And what are you going to put in your sandwich when you get home?
My sandwich, it's for one for when you come in from shopping, you're doing your grocery shopping, you're absolutely starving, can't wait to get the bags unpacked, but you're absolutely starving. Throw on the kettle, take out your nice sliced pan, it doesn't matter whether it's white or brown, butter your bread, nice jam on it, whether it's strawberry, raspberry, homemade blackcurrant is lovely, or blackberry, an apple, any of those. Spread the jam on the slice, one slice of bread, peel your banana, leave the banana whole, just leave it on the sliced bread and roll it up like a Swiss roll. Nice cup of tea, and watch out for the banjo effect as well on that one.
It sounds delicious, like it's worth the mess, is it?
It is, yeah, definitely worth the mess. You'll absolutely enjoy it.
Very good. Jam roly-poly there for Antoinette. Jackie, what about you?
Well, I was in touch with you because of my daughter. When she was three, she was going to play school, and we have always, we're a big foodie household, and she was bringing tiramisu and mozzarella sandwiches to play school, and the facilitators in the play school had no idea what she was eating, and so she would have to try and explain to them what indeed she was eating.
Briefly explain it to me, please, Jackie.
Oh, tiramisu, that's so funny. It's a delicious Greek spread, and it's made with roe and a variety of things. We've made it here ourselves at home, but we had bought it in Tesco, I think, that particular time. So it's a spread that you would associate maybe with Greek food, and then she used to like the plain sliced mozzarella with that on her bread.
Was it kind of so spicy with the cheese to cool it down?
It's more like, it's more like a salty, it's like it has a similar consistency to mayonnaise, but it has a bit of texture because of the roe. And salty, savoury, delicious. Like, it's hard to describe, actually.
Okay,
but yes,
we've got
spicy.
Quite the variety of recipes today. Jackie, thanks for that. And Michael, thanks for calling us as well. What about you?
Yeah, dripping sandwiches.
Dripping sandwiches. Explain, please.
Yeah, well, my mother had a stroke, so she had to put her left leg downtown. And she'd go into the butcher, and he'd give her the size of a bullock of lard. And she'd bring it home, and she'd rend it for about 3 days. And it would turn into dipping. So on a Saturday night, then, we'd all sit around the table and we'd have the dripping sandwich.
So lard turning into dripping. It sounds maybe not great for the old arteries. Did it taste good, Michael?
Well, I was only three, so I can't remember.
It nourished you and kept you going anyway.
Oh, yeah. So, and she used to try and get the lift home from the square and guard, you know?
Right.
So she asked the motorist, I wonder if Dean Crosby was there. And my grandmother said to him, are you going my way?
Michael, so we got to go my way now. I'm sorry, but have a lovely weekend. And thanks very much for calling us on Liveline. Liveline at rte.ie if you want to get in touch with us for all next week as well. Owen says his mother loved a fries cream bar on a fresh white bread sandwich with butter. We'll leave it at that.